This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, that's a fair question, and I think I remember you said you didn't play basketball. So what happens is in the block, if I throw it to you.
That was nice.
No, listen to me.
Don't let me come down there to Fresno and take you to school and back.
No, I'm in Pleasanton, remember?
Oh, that's right.
So if you recall, those games, Kuminga had him down on the block. Coach did. When he got the ball, his turnaround moves were so quick that he can able to turn around and face or just back the guy in and get to the free throw line. But he was always getting to the hoop because everybody says, all the announcers, he's got the quickest first step, when he's down within, 5 feet of the basket. I'm only going to make you, if I'm the coach, I'm going to make you successful. I know what you can't do. Let me do what you do good, which is 5 feet and in. I'm not going to have you working off season on your threes.
Right.
I'm going to put you right back into the paint where you scored all those points, and you were the star of the NBA for a month and a half. All I'm saying is, guys, is Steve has a system, and that's why Bob Myers left. That's another conversation.
Question for you.
Well, we got to get to a legal idea.
God, I had a question for him.
Okay, you can ask me.
Afterward? Okay,
there we go. The one thing I would say,
get legal.
The one thing I would say to my man and Pete Down, if you want to hang out, Kev, during the legal ID, we'll get back to you. But spacing is something I got to. Spacing, Kev. You dwell on that as I do my legal ID, and then we'll come back to you, and I want to hear your answer. All right. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. We lost him.
He didn't want to hang out. No. I didn't touch it.
Because my question was going to be one is this, and you can ask it, Dan. Answer, Dan. So if you look at sometimes coaches, you put Steve Kerr with a team that's very, very talented. He's going to win you championships. If you don't have the talent, can he develop and can he coach? When you gave Steve Kerr all those talent, and you look who was coaching here before, they couldn't do it. But once Steve came to this and talk about spacing, move the ball, play with speed, what he did to the offense, he took them to another level. But he had the athletes and the talent to execute his plan. How much is that the same here? That maybe when you don't have the talent or you don't have the superstars, is he that type of coach?
I think that the NBA, more probably than the NFL, certainly more than baseball, it's a players' league. And he almost went, matter of fact, he was signed, sealed, and delivered to the New York Knicks. And the Warriors came in with an offer at the 25th hour. Had he signed a contract and gone to coach for the New York Knickerbockers, he would have been fired within 18 months. Why? Because they were a trash team. They had no players. And it's only until last year did the New York Knicks become a relevant team. Maybe Spoelstra in Miami and the way they do things there is a little bit different, where sometimes they'll take average players, although I wouldn't call Jimmy Butler and Hero and company average, but they squeeze the most out of their players. But more often than not, things haven't changed in the NBA. Yes, you can, you know, you can get the best out of your players, and I think the biggest asset for a head coach, especially in the NFL, in the NBA, but it's certainly true for the NFL, is that you have to have the respect of your players, and they got to want to play for you. And I think that he's a player's coach to a certain degree. They respect the hell out of him, but I think it all starts with there has to be something with which to work with. There's no Cinderella stories, all right? This isn't the NCAA tournament, okay? There's no North Carolina State and Jimmy Valvano story here. You either have the boys or you don't. Now, you may have, you know, a different system, and you get the most out of your players, and you're freeing guys up, and they like playing for you, create a good culture, as they like to say. But I don't believe in miracles when it comes to the NBA. That's just sort of my quick answer. All right, Guillermo's hanging out in Menlo Park. Guillermo, what's going on, man?
Taking my call. Yeah, I just want to make observation. I think we knew that what the problems was with the Warriors. I think we should have someone, a good blocker, center. Putting in consideration all the teams, they have a good center. And thinking that Raymond is going to continue dealing with all the big guys the other team has is a crazy idea. He's getting tired. I believe that we have a great team. We just need to add a good center that can block some shots. If you remember what happened with the game with the Pacers, there was a player in the last quarter. She scored the same over the ring, like a 6 point, and no one was able to block the shot. I think his name is McCullough. I don't know if you guys remember what happened in that game.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I would say, because you're not alone there, Guillermo, a lot of people, when you look at the Warriors, they're like, you've been small for so long, but they've won without centers. And I know Bogut certainly was a big, and you know the Festus Azeleys of the world and the Pachulias, but this is not a team that's ever been center-centric.
No.
And Draymond's been able to do it. But I would, to your point, and to a lot of people out there that feel very similarly, that the NBA is cyclical, and you're beginning to see the return of the big. And teams that are good now in the NBA that win titles usually have a serviceable big man that can rim protect and give you some presence on the interior. And the Warriors have never had that. But I mean, if you were to look at when we talk about their championship run, I mean, they've been able to do it without that big guy. All right, Jay's hanging out in his driveway. What's going on, Jay? And why are you in a driveway?
Because I don't want to smoke inside.
Oh, well, that's... I'm assuming you don't live alone.
Well, I have a renter.
Okay.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And when you say smoke...
Hey, Lo!
What up, baby? Jay!
Hey! Hey, man, I just want to say this one thing, right? I played fullback. I wasn't even close to your talent, but I had your mentality, bro.
Got it. That's it.
Cheers to you.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. You already know that
Cheers
mentality,
you,
brother.
Bro.
Thank you. Cheers.
No, I remember seeing you out there, man. I was like, that's a devastating man.
Mm.
All right. So what I want to say about the Warriors, man, the Warriors front office, the Warriors, and all the Warriors fans, we all got to understand that panic mode is going down right now. And moves need to be made, all right? Steph Curry, awesome. Everyone knows this. All the championships, awesome. Everyone knows this. But we are at the point. We are at the point where we need to understand that Bill Walsh is in the building, and it's time to break it up and think about the future. It sucks. Everything about it sucks. We have to make the changes. And that's all I want to say.
Pass that along. in the driveway. Let me get in here, Jay. Come on, Jay. Don't bogart that thing. No, Jay, I'm just giving you grief. I don't know what the hell he just said. I heard Bill Walsh.
Yeah, Bill Walsh is in the building. I think he was alluding to, hey, look, everyone's in panic mode. It's time to poop, turn the page. He's like, hey, Joe Montana had to turn the page. Only thing that I asked him, but who do you turn the page to? Like you and I keep alluding to. Who do you turn it to? I understand you're saying, okay, let's move on. What are you moving on? What assets do you have that can make this team relevant? And that's what that's the thing that I don't understand. And I don't understand people saying, turn the page, get better, do these things. But what are you giving up? How much can you get? And what does that look like?
They love you, Lowe. That's all I got to say. 925 is coming in with that. Damn, Lowe brought up anybody day. I mean, we got more callers that just, seriously.
Your boy used to be out there, man. I played the game. And I think that's what people respect. Do I know baseball and basketball? No, but I know the mentality. I know what it takes to win. And that's what I can relate to. And I think that's what people understand. Hey, look, I can't sit there and talk X's and O's and talk about, you know, get down in the box and 2-2-1-2 defense, box and one, and do all those things. I play a little basketball, but I'm not knowledgeable of that baseball warp and all. It's about mentality. Sports come down to mentality. If you work, and even if you don't, you're not the best player. Andrew Bogut wasn't great. Well, you know what made Andrew Bogut was great about him? His personality, his attitude, and his willingness, and his commitment, and the dog in him. He couldn't necessarily do those things, but you knew what you were going to get. That's what's so frustrating, you know, about Kuminga, is because of the fact you're saying, okay, where's that effort? Bogut could, I mean, he wasn't that type of guy, but you saw certain guys, the effort and the energy and how they played, it made up for the lack of ability athletically.
By the way, would they drug test for marijuana? I mean, I'm sorry. Going back to Jay and his
driver. Yeah. In NFL.
Was that ever a drug of choice in the NFL? Well, I mean, if you guys went out, I mean, guys, you know, they like to smoke their pot from time to time. Or were guys, was it alcohol? What was?
I'll tell you what. It's so, here. I mean, I don't know if it's telling on guys.
Yeah, but, I mean, you don't have to.
I'm not going to name guys. Wouldn't do that. But I'm going to tell you right now. For guys to get caught smoking weed, in getting this program, you have to be pretty much an idiot. Because here's the reason why. You go to camp and they don't test you during the year. They usually don't test you during the year. So right before camp, like 6 weeks before, are you in training camp? Right before your training camp or during training camp, you get tested. Test you for everything. Once you get tested, if you're clean, guys can smoke pot all year long. They won't get tested for pot. Now, what you get randomly tested for that you can't do, people, I don't think guys can get away with it. It's no way. I think it's possible, but not probable. You would have to be like a needle in a haystack. It's steroids and those things. Because with steroids, it's random. So I got tested one time 5-7 times in a row. They randomly put you in a computer and they spit out the names and you got to pee for them, you know, on Monday after the game, right after the game, 24 hours after the game, you got to go and pee. And so steroids, it's hard. Guys can't do steroids or those stuff in the league because you are tested. Now, weed, when guys, you hear people get popped for weed, bro, and they're in the program, that means you only got tested one time and you knew the test was coming. What the hell are you doing?
Smoking weed?
Yeah, but that's the point that I'm saying. Once you get past that one, guys could smoke. So it was kind of weird when I seen guys get popped in the program because you only get tested the one time, then you can smoke all you want.
Well, now I think, I'm not sure if the NFL as much, but certainly the NBA, Major League Baseball, sort of, you know, loosen the reins and all of that when it comes to marijuana. You know, especially with the legalization over the last couple of years, I don't think that the penalties are as harsh, nor is the sort of structure in terms of doing it throughout the course of a season. All right, we're talking about the San Francisco 49ers, we're talking about the Golden State Warriors.
Niners on the brain. You got Niners on the brain.
Yeah, well, no, he went Bill Walsh there for a moment, and is thinking about the good old Bill Walsh days. But just talking about the Golden State Warriors, by the way, Steve Kerr is going to join us in a matter of a little more than 15 minutes. We'll hear from the head coach of the Warriors. But before we do that, can I finally sneak in? Because I don't think I'm going to have an opportunity to talk to the Kansas City Chiefs.
We got to go. We got to.
Just for 5 minutes. So Kansas City wins on Christmas Day. And remember the one knock that we were saying, well, they're not blowing people out. It's getting all fluke. Well, it's not a bad call or a block kick. We're talking about a team now that looks as though they're putting into that other gear. And there's two things I want to ask you is that Kansas City now gets the number one seed, so they get a month off. But there's two schools of thought there. I want to know what side of the fence you fall on. Is having that much time off, do you lose your edge? Because they're playing their best football right now, despite the fact they've only lost once in the calendar year, going back to last Christmas when they got beat by the Raiders. But it was a month off.
And they should have lost to the Raiders this year.
Could that be the worst thing for this team right now?
No. I think it's the best. Okay. I think it's the best thing. You watch Kansas City. The other day, you and I talked, and I said, everyone's like, someone's going to beat them. Someone's going to beat them. They just got Hollywood Brown back. And what he does, stretching the field, vertical, with Isaiah, kid out of Fresno, shout out,
Worthy.
Central High School, Worthy. You have speed, a vertical. You see Kelsey now, even more prevalent now. Where's he been? And look at Kelsey. Everyone's like, oh, Travis lost it. Look how he was, because you brought in Hollywood, all these guys. He just got back. Now your offense has spread out, and Mahomes is delivering. That's what you and I are talking about. If you could get to 24, you can beat them. Now the machine is back. Pittsburgh's got a good defense. They just slapped on them. They just beat up on them. I'm telling you, Kansas City Chiefs, they're going to be a tough out. Steelers, I thought the Steelers would give them way more of a test than that. And they did.
They had everything to play for. That was a bad performance for the Steelers.
Everything. Bad performance. But I'm going to tell you, I still, Buffalo still gives you some hope because they're running the ball well. But maybe Baltimore, because when you watch Lamar Jackson, I mean, you look at his numbers and the way that they're able to run the ball. I don't think Derrick Henry carried the ball, I think, 7 or 8 times the first time they played Kansas City. Derrick Henry, they didn't even give him the ball, and they barely lost. Toe tap, scored that touchdown. It was out of bounds. So I Baltimore is heating up at the right time, too. So I don't know. Somebody's got to be Kansas City. I don't want to see Kansas City, but I'm telling you, like you said, they're a tough out. They're getting it together. Their defense is playing lights out, and now you got your receiving core back, and they look like they're getting ready to score, and they're just sitting full stride.
925 wants you to run for mayor of Oakland or Fresno. Would you ever consider getting into politics?
No, man, because it's just politics.
Got some skeletons in the closet?
Yeah, and you just never want to be dirty. It's just politicians, man. Right. You don't. Yeah. You got to realize they start off wanting to help. They really want to help. And just big people come in and just it skews your train of thought. So many things happen. I love it, and I wish that these mayors and these individuals really work for the people. But our government, I just pray for them. But it's tough to be in politics, man. It really is.
Wow, that's a good answer. So here's the other question when it comes to the NFL. You mentioned Lamar Jackson. Who's your MVP?
You know what? I'm tired of seeing Lamar because this would be third time or fourth time. I would say Josh Allen because –
He's the odds-on favorite. Vegas has him as a clear favorite. I'm just saying, did anybody see what the hell Lamar Jackson did yesterday?
Lamar Jackson has thrown for more yards. Pull it up. Lamar Jackson has more rushing yards. Lamar Jackson has thrown for more touchdowns. Lamar Jackson
his quarterback rating is off the charts.
I like Josh, and I think I'd give it to Josh because he doesn't have the weapons Lamar has. But if you look at Lamar Jackson's numbers, touchdown, rushing, everything, His numbers are better. Yeah. His numbers say MVP. I'm just telling you. But only reason I'm saying Josh is because Josh, to me, has done it with less, and Lamar has done it with more.
Well, speaking of doing it with less, why doesn't Patrick Mahomes get any votes? I mean, if it's about MVP, the true definition of MVP, this guy has no offensive line because they've been banged up. He's dealt with, now it's Hunt that's getting the ball because Pacheco's been out. You're talking about wide receivers. Hollywood Brown finally returns this football team. But this guy, I mean, all
Lamar
he does
Jackson
is,
has more MVPs than him.
Yeah.
And that it's hard. That's the part that's just like, okay, how can Lamar Jackson have more MVPs than Mahomes?
Well, Lamar Jackson has got it. He's got to get to that Super Bowl. Like, he can't get them happy feet in a championship game again.
And Mahomes beats him every time. They head up, and there are times when it means something. Mahomes B team.
The other thing before we get off the NFL is we talk about Pittsburgh for a second. I like Tomlin. I know you love Tomlin, but he does this a lot. Like, he'll put up some big numbers in the regular season. But when it comes to this time, because it's all about how you're playing right now. I mean, I don't care what you did in September and August. It's right now. Who's hit their stride? And they're leaking oil, man.
They are. They
and
are.
He's not. He since Roethlisberger left. I mean, I don't know if he's. I don't think he's won a playoff game.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The difference is this. If you look at Tomlin, they don't have a quarterback. How many? Okay, so if you talk about the coaches, Harbaugh, how many playoffs, how many Super Bowls has he been to compared to Tomlin? Tomlin got him. You think about any coach in the AFC, the only one who has him would probably be, you know, and he's got everyone, that's Andy Reid. But how many did Andy Reid have when he didn't have a quarterback? Now you look at who Andy Reid has a quarterback. You look at Tomlin, who he has a quarterback. He has a quarterback that's way past his prime, that won with the Legion of Doom, who won the Super Bowl, not really their offense. He's got playing with, you know, Russell Wilson. So I think that Russ is limited. I don't think that I thought Russ was having a decent year. The guy turns over the ball. He's a turnover. He turns the ball over way too much.
Who's that?
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, well,
he's turning the ball over way too much. He's not an elite quarterback any longer. He's a manageable quarterback. But, you know, you watch the game. They're going in to tie that game up. He throws interception on the goal line. He fumbles. I'm not off of Tomlin. I think if Tomlin had a top-tier quarterback or a guy, where would they be? Because they play pretty good defense.
Well, that gets back to when you were asking me about Steve Kerr and can you make something out of nothing? And I think that's not that Steelers don't have boys. I mean, T.J. Watt's for real. And you know,
that's why they compete.
Yeah. But their defense and the buy-in to what he gets the most out of his that's
oh yeah.
If you're talking about a coach that there's a cause and effect and an impact on a team, it's Tomlin. Like Tomlin is the reason why the Steelers are
stay relevant.
And it's him. And so, I mean, I hear some people say that he's overrated, but he's just got to, like, you got to do it now, though, this time of the year.
You like, put him in Dallas and change, get him some weapon, like those, and you change the ore, change. I mean, here's the deal. You let Tomlin go, he would have 15 coaching jobs.
Yeah.
That's the kind, I mean, you got to realize, you think about this guy has not missed the playoffs in probably 8-9 years. He's barely never had a down. I mean, one out of the last 10 years, I think he missed it maybe once. So
never had a losing season.
Never had a losing season. I mean, so there's a coach that, like you said, he gets the best out of those guys.
All right, are we done with NFL talk?
Yeah, but Kansas City, they just like you said, they're getting ready to hit their stride. Just when we thought they were out, now all of a sudden they're scoring. They can do it all. They look for real,
and they've got a whole month off, this time of the year. What is that? Because you hear stuff like that. But somebody who's played in the league, to get a month off this time of the year, how significant is that?
It's huge. The body, now you got to talk about an ankle from your quarterback, MVP. He's going to get his ankle right.
Well, Chris Jones didn't play in the last game.
Chris Jones get to get healthy. Now you're in a situation where you're going to come into playoffs, and you have home field throughout the playoffs. You're talking about a team that it's going to get dangerous, and they just know how. Now they're getting ready to turn it on, like you just alluded to. They're going to be a tough out, and I'm going to tell you what they're going to do. Look for them. They are pulling. They are hoping and praying. I wouldn't be surprised if they let Denver win. They're going to let Denver win. They don't. There's one team I keep telling you. Me and you talk about it in the AFC that teams don't want to make the playoffs. They do not want to see friggin' the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow in the playoffs. Pull up Joe Burrow's name. Joe Burrow is having a MVP. You're talking about who's another guy? Joe Burrow should be mentioned in the MVP.
Mm.
Go look at Joe Burrow's numbers, what he's been doing. Lucas, is Joe Burrow's in there? When you think about Joe Burrow's numbers and what he's done with the weak team, not having a great defense, not having weak sauce, nobody wants to see Cincinnati
terrible
Bengals.
Terrible offensive line.
Terrible. Horrible. They don't want to see Joey Burrow get in the playoffs. So I think Kansas City.
Well,
they're going to choke. They're going to don't want to see him.
I know, I hear you, but you know why? Who's the one guy that's beaten them at KC?
Joe Cool.
I mean, that's the one guy that took on Mahomes and Reed and everything that you mentioned.
And go head-to-head. And look at his numbers. This dude, he's got numbers. It's not that he's just, like, oh, Joe Burrow's, they haven't been playing well. Joe Burrow's have put up numbers this year. If they got in the playoffs, I would almost say you got to give it to him because he's done it with not a good defense, not a good offensive line. He's done it with less.
But it's a team that, I mean, you're going to need Denver to win that game or to lose that game against Kansas City.
Denver is going to lose because Denver's going to lose because
Carson Wentz gets the start, right?
Yeah, Denver's. I mean, Kansas City's going to lose that game. Kansas City's not going to because they're going to say we don't. Kansas City's going to say let's keep Denver in the playoffs. Every team in the AFC that's in the playoffs. Do you think they'd rather see Denver in the playoffs, or do you think they'd rather see freaking Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs? Every team rather see Denver Broncos in the playoffs instead of seeing Joe Burrow, who's been there, who's been who's been to a Super Bowl and freaking could almost beat the Rams. So AFC does not want to see Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow get in the playoffs.
You out on Bo Nix?
Now Bo Nix is playing well, but watch what happens. Now watch what happens Sunday. Watch what Joe Burrow's do to this. Watch what Joe Burrow's do to the Denver Broncos. He's going to take them to the woodshed.
All right, we want to get back into some Golden State Warrior talk just to sort of lead into. Steve Kerr is going to join us coming up at 5:30 as the Golden State Warriors, who have lost 11 of 14 after the 12-3 start. He's going to join us in a matter of moments. You played a little bit in high school, right?
Oh, yeah. Your boy had a nice little jade. You know, I'd back you down.
Did you get any offers?
For basketball?
Yeah, no.
No. I did. You got to realize.
Was Tark at Fresno State when you were
No, yeah, Tark was there. Tark wasn't there. You got to realize, though, when I played, you got to realize I was California State champion. I was 42-0 with 38 pins in my senior year.
Oh.
I was California Athlete of the Year. I played, you know, I did football. I did wrestling. I did track and field. They had Janet Evans. You know who Janet Evans is?
Yeah, the swimmer.
The swimmer. And you know who Michael Chang is?
Tennis player.
You know who Curtis Conway is?
Wide receiver, USC.
Willie McGinnis. So you have to realize, it said, in 1989, it said, Janet's the queen and Lorenzo's the king. I was California male athlete of the year. Give me another whoop. Yes, your boy. You be doubting on me, B. Doubting on me, Dan. Doubting on me.
I'm doubting on you, man. I love you. So does the text line. All right. We also love Steve Kerr. He's going to be coming up in a matter of moments. We'll talk to the head coach of the Golden State Warriors and find out how he thinks the Warriors need to fix things after that huge, huge, disappointing, frustrating loss at the hands of the Los Angeles Lakers on Christmas Day. We'll do that and much more. It's Lorenzo Neal and Stan Devone with Steve Kerr next on 95.7 The Game.
Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
It's Lorenzo Neal. It's Dan Devone. Close out the final half hour of the show. Reminder, we are sponsored by San Francisco International Airport. Time now to go out to the River Island guest line because it's time for Coach Kerr. Presented by Great Clips in Sports. Success is about team effort. And the same is true for your hair. Great clips. It's going to be great. Coach, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing well. And before we get into the last play of that game, we've been dealing with callers all day that want that thing broken down and obviously answers to it. Just to get into the good part of this, and that being Steph Curry, who is just, again, nothing short of amazing. Do you, at this point of the relationship between the two, do you get a sense that something like what happened last night is about to happen? Because he's obviously not played on that stage being Christmas Day in the past, coming off the game, which was not Steph-esque against Indiana. Do you just have a sort of a sense that he was going to go off like he did last night?
Yeah, I mean, he's got such a sense of the moment and a flair for the show, you know, the fact that it's national TV on Christmas. Steph's going to step up for a game like that, and it didn't surprise me at all, especially as you mentioned, coming off a bad night, you know, a few nights before that. So this is a guy we've known for a long time. I mean, he's just an incredible performer and one of the greatest of all time for a reason.
Coach, when you think about the ones that you've been accustomed growing up and watching and being a part of, Berg and Magic, Is LeBron and Steph equivalent to that type of game day magic when you're thinking about what that meant and what the NBA, you know, those two type of guys with that type of ilk?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I grew up, we're in Los Angeles right now. We're down here for the Clippers tomorrow night. And, you know, pulling into the hotel, I got a lot of memories of my childhood, you know, growing up rooting for Magic and watching the Lakers and the Celtics play in the finals. And those were amazing days, iconic days. And what we've seen from Steph and LeBron, particularly meeting in the finals four different times, you know, it's they are basically the Magic and Bird of their day, for sure. I mean, just not only brilliant, you know, all-time players, but charismatic and, you know, showmen. Everywhere they go, people are, you know, they're coming to the game to see those two. And that's pretty unique. And it's also unique to see the rivalry that, you know, turned into them being teammates this past summer in Paris, and for me to be there and observe that was just incredible.
No question, Coach. Coach, also just kind of looking at the state of basketball then, the viewership, and watching, you know, where it's at now. What do you think is going on when you think about it, when the ratings are down, or, you know, what basketball is? Will it come back? How do you, you know, being a connoisseur and being a part of so many, you know, great franchises and being a part of this great franchise, what do you contribute it to, and do you see it coming back? What is the biggest thing in your opinion?
Well, I think ratings are down. You know, there's a lot more options these days than ever before. So I don't know that ratings are as important as they were 20 years ago. There's so many ways to consume the product and I know that, you know, there's proof there, right? The league just signed this massive rights deal. So it's not so much about TV ratings as it is about content. And so I think the dynamics are much different on that front. As for the popularity of the game, I just think that the NBA has always been very cyclical, you know, and it often kind of rides the momentum of star players and superstar teams like the Lakers and Celtics in the 80s or the Bulls in the 90s. You know, Warriors this last decade. And so it's not a surprise that, you know, as Steph and LeBron and Kevin Durant and the current stars start to wind down, that, you know, maybe the league takes a hit popularity-wise. But, you know, the next guys they'll be coming. And the game will survive quite well, I think. And there will be another uptick before too long. It's always been the way it's worked in the NBA.
Coach Kerr joins us on the River Islands guest line. And, Coach, all right, take us in the huddle with 6.3 seconds to go. What was said to the team? And, well, you know, sports talk radio, it's sort of the nature of this beast, is that people want to point fingers. If there was a breakdown defensively, should there have been a help defender? Can you just walk us through the final 6.3 last night?
Well, you know the ball's going to go to LeBron. So we put our best switching lineup out there. You know, we wanted to make sure we kept the ball from LeBron as best we could. And our guys did a good job of that. LeBron tried to get the ball up top. Steph jumped out. Steph was guarding the passer. He jumped out and took that pass away. And then, you know, Reeves was the guy who was open. Reeves made a hell of a move. You know, those are tough plays. Wiggs tried to stay in front. And I think, you know, Reeves had a big game, had made some threes, so Wiggs wanted to press up on him, and he made a hell of a play. He got to the baseline and got right to the rim.
Was Wiggins, do you think, was he expecting help at the rim? It looks as though, and Reeves is, look, for those that aren't familiar with Austin Reeves, he can do that. He can get to the rack, yeah. But was there, I guess if you were to replay this the day after, was there any sort of notion to maybe give him a tough sort of mid-range? Or was the idea to get up on him, and should there have been a help defender, maybe somebody to meet him on the baseline?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we teach all the time is send baseline. We never want someone driving middle, because when you drive middle, you have the whole floor, and now there are way more options in terms of passing and spacing. So we always send sideline. So Wiggs got him going in the right direction. And, you know, again, Reeves made a hell of a play. He got there quickly. And, you know, we just it was a tough loss based on the fact that we battled back. We had our chances, but, you know, just couldn't get the stop at the end.
I hate to single anybody out, but was Jonathan Kuminga the guy that maybe, because he looked, just looking at on replays, he was watching, I believe, Hachimura, was he the guy that maybe if there was somebody that could have helped at the baseline, that it should have been him to close out on Reeves?
There's hell, you know, we talk about help defense all the time, and that's it's all part of it, you know, and you know, it's the game happens quickly, and you know, it's a game of reactions and decisions, and so you work on all these schemes, you work on, you know, the different scenarios that are coming up, and you know, you try to execute them, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't, and you just go from there.
Hey, Coach, that's what old Marty Schottner used to tell us. Hey, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you. And I know you as a coach, you just, you know the deal, and you can't necessarily call people out. And that's just, you know, behind closed doors, you do what you need to do as a coach. When you see a players-only meeting, was that called by Steph and Dre? And what are those usually, in your opinion, good for? And what do you think the notion of that for?
Yeah, I guess I guess that was mentioned in the media last night, maybe after the game. I don't know exactly how that came about, but you know, anytime you have those types of meetings, they're meant to be private. So when stuff comes out, you know, it's not ideal, but it's also not something that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time talking about, because those are private conversations and, sure, and things that the team deals with, but it's not unusual, you know. I mean, teams across the league periodically through the year meet, especially if you've lost 11 out of 14 like we have, and that was what the guys did.
Coach Steve Kerr joining us on the River Island guest line. And Coach, you know, after the hot start at 12-3, it looked as though you guys were hanging your hat clearly with defense and doing it. It was almost like hockey line shifts. You had these 12 or 13 guys that would come in with this energy and just suffocating and blitzing guys. And now when you look at the team defensively, it's sort of lacking that. And you know this, Lowe, as well as anybody, that defense is one of those things that it's sort of an intangible, right? It's buy-in. They use words like want to. I'm just curious, Coach, how do you, as a coach, what is it that you say? Is there anything that you can do to sort of bring back that energy that was clearly the identity of the team in the first month of the season?
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's just a confidence issue. You know, we had a great vibe early, and things were rolling along, and we're playing a million people, and, you know, when you're winning, that's a good thing. You know, that's when you're playing all those people and you're winning, everyone's happy. But as soon as you start losing, then playing 12 people becomes problematic. And that's basically what happened. We start losing, and we decided we had to counter that, and we had to get back, cut back to 9 or 10. And unfortunately, that hasn't resolved our slide either. So we're scrambling right now, but our defense definitely is not as energetic. I think it's a confidence thing more than anything. We've got to find our groove again. And, you know, if we can stay with it and get through this difficult stretch, I know our defense is strong. I mean, we're a third of the way through the season. We're a top 10 defense. So we know it's real. But we've got to find that confidence that leads to energy and force, for sure.
Coach, just to stay with the defense for a second, a guy that fascinates me is Brandon Pajemski, because he's played much better offensively of late, but simply he's had a hard time of it. I think he's sort of in his own head, and I think the offense would come around. But the one thing about this guy is that he may miss five shots in a row, but rest assured, he is going to turn his butt and get back defensively, either take that charge, snare a rebound, or get out on a guy. So it does not, He's one of those guys where it doesn't affect his defensive play, and maybe he understands that that's how he's going to get run, is that he's got to be a guy that's buying in defensively. But I just sort of wanted to compare and contrast that to Jonathan Kuminga, who is so raw in terms of the athleticism, is so nasty. And that dunk he had where he just lowered his shoulder last night on Christie is, I mean, that's what it is that this guy can do. But it seems as though at times defensively he can sometimes he doesn't have the same energy maybe as he does on offense. He seems to be a bit, maybe for lack of a better word, confused on rotations and not as communicative and not as loud as maybe he should be. And not to single out Jonathan Kuminga, but just as a coach, because you see guys who will improve as young players. He's only 22 at the end of the day. And guys offensively, you know, they learn to shoot threes or different facets of their game where they get better. But how difficult is it for a young player, and can you cite examples, to get better defensively? Does there have to be, does that light go on at some point that they understand that there's a necessity on that part of the floor that maybe they didn't address early on in their career? Or is it just sort of a DNA thing that you either have it or you don't?
Every player is different, you know, and we get players at different stages of their careers, different experience levels. The modern player generally does not have nearly as much of a fundamental base as the guys even from Dre and Steph's generation, because most of these guys are coming in with very little college experience. And so it's a different deal these days in the NBA. We're doing the job that, frankly, the college coaches used to do for us. It's tricky because you don't have much practice time, and you don't have the same level of control as a college coach does. And so I think what's interesting for us is you just get a sense of where each guy is when he gets here, how much he needs, how much teaching he needs, what he needs to work on. But they're all different, and I think a lot of basketball is just kind of innate. I think players, you see players who have feel, you see guys who have a really good sense for the game, what's happening on the floor. The other guys who maybe don't, and those are the guys who need more teaching, more prep. And it's all based on each individual, and that's our job as coaches to bring them all along, regardless of their experience.
Coach, how many championships you won as a player and as a coach?
5 as a player, 4 as a coach.
Okay, I ask that question because people are like, where are you going with this low? You won. You have talent. Steph, Clay, and all the boys were together. We know that you won championships. You understand how to win championships. You've done it as a player. You've done it as a coach. How frustrated is that times when people question and you're like, I know how to do this. I've done it on every level. Give me the talent. Give me those things, and I can win championships. How frustrating is that times when people ask the questions and, question, what you're doing and the reason why you're doing it, and how hard is it to answer those questions without necessarily going too deep?
Well, I think that's the job, especially these days. And I tell our players all the time, I mean, that's why we get paid, that's why we live the lives that we do. I mean, if we didn't want to deal with the criticism, we could go coach at a different level really easily, and not have to deal with the spotlight. I enjoy the spotlight. I enjoy the competition at the highest level with everybody watching. To me, that gets me going. But I also embrace the fact that part of that means that there's going to be a ton of criticism, and because so many people are watching and so many people are interested. So I never take it personally. I know how hard it is. I think basketball is more art than science. I think building a team is more art than science. And I've been on great teams. I've been lucky enough to be part of great teams. And there's no one formula that makes it work. But when it clicks, you know it. You can feel it. And so that's always my goal as a coach, is to help a team click and find that space where it's just beautiful to watch and to see and to experience when everybody is just on the same page and all trying to do one thing, and that's win a game. And the fans feel that. Everybody feels that that's always the goal, and it's just a lot harder to get there than people think.
Coach Kerr joins us tonight. Hey, Coach, I don't know if there might be a stat for this. I don't know, although they got a stat for everything these days in the NBA. But in terms of you being effective ATO after a timeout and designing those plays, especially in the closing moments, I mean, I can't think of a coach who does it more effectively than you. But just take us again in the huddle. On those two timeout plays you drew up last night for Steph, beginning with the one and the three, which was ridiculous because his release point, I don't know where he shot that thing from. But can you just sort of take us through those two? What it is that you designed to bring them within one and then to tie the game?
Well, some of the plays that you run plays that you have installed already that the players can run on the fly. So the baseline one, the one you mentioned where Steph just, you know, hit that crazy corner three, that's just a late clock out of bounds underneath play that we have. So we practice it, you know, once a week or so. And if you don't have a timeout and you need to run something, you've got a handful of those. And then the other ones, when you take a timeout, those tend to be more specialized. You probably wouldn't be able to run it on the fly. Maybe you practice it, or maybe you just draw it up and trust the guys to run it. But I find that NBA coaches in general are really talented with this stuff, much more so than when I played. I think the stuff that people run late game is much more creative than it's ever been. And the shooting that we have in the league now is just insane. And so if you can put five guys on the floor who can all shoot threes, it just opens up the floor and it allows coaches to draw up a lot of really interesting stuff. And those are fun plays when they click, and then when they don't, it's really humbling. So it's all, you know, kind of all part of that late game stuff.
Coach, really quick, you know, Lorenzo Neal, who I love, but he's peeking at Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, first time around. It's on one of the monitors in the studio here, and it's at Madison Square Garden. Any thoughts on Frazier Ali, first time around at the Garden when Frazier knocked him down? Did you have any recall?
Well, I mean, what was I, like four? I mean,
that was, what year was it?
That was 70s, man. I watched it replay. I never watched it live. Okay. I was born in 70. I mean, Coach, come on, don't, you trying to make us out to be dinosaurs.
I remember the iconic shot of Ali standing over Frazier. That was a still photograph. I don't know if that was the same fight we're talking about.
No, that's over Liston. But I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, that was Liston.
Where he's standing crazy over him. Yeah. Right.
Standing over him.
See, my grandpa, Coach, he was frigging Oliver. We had watched fights. I had to watch fights with him every night, every day. So I loved boxing back in the day. Never did it, but I loved it.
Yeah. You were wrestling. Really good.
I was never a huge boxing fan, but I do remember when Ali went rope-a-dope against George Foreman.
Zaire.
Yeah. I still use that term every once in a while with our coaching staff. You know, we could just go rope-a-dope for a while and then
survive.
And the younger coaches are like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
You know, there was a great writer who wrote for, I believe, the Times, and he had this great description. I'm going to butcher it, but he said it was like watching somebody lean out of their window and check on their drains, their range. You know, on the roof has the drainage.
And
he had that, because if you remember, Ali was just
leaning on the ropes.
But he had that back bend while, you know, George Foreman obviously was punching himself out. But did you have a follow-up?
That was what Coach was saying. He's saying, hey, his team, hey, let's just rope-a-dope. Let's take all these punches, body shots, and last quarter we'll find a way to win it like you almost did last night, Coach. I got you. We're gonna make this work.
Coach, really quick, you're holding out on the front end of the back-to-back tomorrow night. Is that a trend? You guys will continue and talk about Draymond being questionable as well.
Well, Steph, you know, he's had the knee issue, and our training staff, a couple weeks ago when the knee issue started, we really wanted to make sure we stayed in front of it. And part of staying in front of it is not playing him in the back-to-backs, both ends for now. And so hopefully that helps him get out of the woods. But, yeah, he'll sit tomorrow, and he'll be ready to play against Phoenix.
Hey, Coach, we really appreciate the time. Oh, I'm sorry. They just blew my ear. They want to hear about Draymond. Any update on Draymond?
Yeah, no update on Draymond, but, you know, similar, just given the mileage Draymond has on him and him being banged up. He hurt his back a little bit last night. He fell pretty hard on the floor. You know, periodically through the year, we're gonna have to give both those guys some nights off. And so tomorrow could be that night for Draymond, too. We'll see.
Coach, happy holidays, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Happy holidays to you, too.
You got it. That's Coach Kerr.
Told you I couldn't ask those tough questions. I couldn't do it, man. It's just you were great, man. I mean, fans need to hear. I love how you just said, hey, look, 6 seconds left. How does this happen? Is he supposed to collapse, stop the baseline? These are questions, and you heard Coach. He couldn't, and that's the thing. He couldn't sell his guy out.
Yeah, you could see that.
And that's why I was like, that's why I jumped on. I was like, let me jump on this grenade for you, Coach. Because he heard him. He's like, look, hey, sometimes you do this, and this is what we coach, and this is what we – he understood. And for you to call a guy out, it's tough. And I understand the situation.
Yeah, because, you know, he it's not just a conversation between he and I. He knows that with – social media being what it is and things going viral, that Jonathan Kuminga is going to get that.
Right.
Like he's going to hear, and they're not going to hear it framed in the question.
Right.
It's just going to be
they're
Coach
gonna cut
Kerr
yours
said,
out. The way you framed exactly. It was great. They're going to cut that part out and just say, Coach Kerr says, and it's all on Twitter, Instagram, like you said, on Twitch and friggin', you know, on X. So I thought it was a great question, and he did his best he could to answer it.
Yeah, no, but you obviously spot that because you've been in that situation. I would love to do this interview after they've won five in a row.
Exactly, because I'm gonna tell you right now, when you call out a player like that, you don't think those players like what about the coach? The coach, you don't think the coach has made hell of a mistakes? Uh-huh. Kerr, coaches, why'd you call this play? Why'd you do this in a game? You could do that and go back and forth. So once you start doing that and calling out players publicly, now you can do it in the meeting. Of course, you can show it in the meeting and rewind it 5-6 times and say, look, man, you got to rotate. Look, you see the baseline. Guys sitting on the baseline. What are we taught? Collapse the baseline. Stop it. Make him get the ball. Throw it out. You do that in meetings. You just can't do it publicly.
No, that's a good point. And he was smart to sort of do the tap dance because that's the only choice he had. All right, that's going to do it for us. From my man Lucas and Pasta.
Lucas! Being
risotto! A little risotto! Chef's kiss! Mwah! Lorenzo Neal, this is Dan Devone. We're back at it tomorrow afternoon. Until then, good night, everybody.